and welcome to episode 226 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and joining me this week, the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And our very own Scotty, it's Tony Esmond.
Right, just before we came on, I'd like to make it clear, before Vince said, no, we have to start, hurry up, Dan was quoting Robbie Williams songs.
A song, one lyric.
Seems to know really well, though. It's like, yeah. I really came up there pretty quick.
That lyric, I can just kill it.
No, oh my God, this melody. God.
That was the equivalent of that when he, who's that shock jock who hums into a speaker and it turns ladies on?
Oh, Howard Stern.
Yeah. Howard Stern. It's
equivalent. I honestly thought this was going to become a musical episode then, but maybe not this week.
We can't compete with Dan's other musical episode.
No, we can't.
I didn't sing.
Yeah. He's a thespian in every way, shape and form. No, but we have a guest, as you just said then. This week we're joined by the creator of the newly launched webcomic, Skellybob, and longtime friend of the show, Tom Curry. Hello, sir.
Hello. Hello, how are you doing?
Tom. Good.
That's the most positive way he's ever said a name of a comic. Skellybob. That
was like it's properly fun to say.
It's got a nice little ring to it, you know?
Yeah.
I want to hear Dan say it.
Skellybob.
That was everything I wanted and more.
I wish Orph would come back now. Dan twisted it. That'd be good.
Yeah.
Then the mouse and the mouse organ woke up.
I can see it. It's kind of like after Pebble Mill. Like it, sort of some guy with a black glove with a skeleton painted on the front.
Finger Bob.
Skellybob.
Yeah. If we just say a few more times, we're really good as well.
Don't say it too many times, because otherwise he'll come Skellybob to life and then kill you. No, but obviously we're going to talk about Tom's new webcomic fairly soon. And obviously this show is about webcomics as well, so we're going to talk a fair bit about that. And we've got lots of suggestions and et cetera. But it's another week. This is the last show before Thought Bubble.
Yeah, isn't it?
So
God, it seemed so far off for so long, and now I've got loads of work to do and I haven't done it.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, there's lots of people who are probably listening to this show who are packing their stuff, or maybe they're just getting ready, or maybe they're just... If you're travelling to Thought Bubble when you're listening to this episode, welcome.
Yeah.
Hopefully this will kill the next couple of hours.
Tiredness kills, so take a break.
Oh, God, we got one of those on the show. Right, with that in mind, we thought...
Skellybob.
That's brilliant. It's not going to get old, either.
I'm going to keep saying it.
Yeah. We've got a couple of other things to talk about this week. We've got some shout-outs later. We've got a nice list of shout-outs. And like I say, some listener questions and stuff. So it's a jam-packed show. And you know what else is jam-packed?
Comic House.
Yes, Comic House. Our sponsor, Comic House. They're jam-packed with amazing indie comics. Because Comic House
is... Not jam.
Do you like
is
jam?
Is there a comic about jam? I don't mind jam,
Of course.
More of a marmalade.
Do you know there's a post-apocalyptic novel about jam?
What?
Is it?
Yeah, just called Jam. It's about Sydney being taken over by sentient jam.
Why are we doing the show? Why aren't we reading
this
now?
Is that the long list, Jira, or is that...
Sorry, say again?
That make the book a long list?
Yeah.
There's got to be a zine about making jam.
Yeah,
come on.
There's some hipster jam thing somewhere.
Yeah.
I've got to stop saying hipster. It's like hipster racism. I love hipsters.
Well, you are one, Tony.
No, I'm not.
Ooh,
I can cultivate this.
A hipster ally.
Friends with hipsters.
Yeah. You should have that on a t-shirt. That'd be good.
I hate those people.
You can also get t-shirts from Comic House, who are our sponsor.
Can you, Vince?
You can. I'm not wearing one tonight, but I wore one last week, and they do hats and stuff. But the most amazing thing they do is comics. And if you go to comichouse.com.
I wore my Emotional in My Pants t-shirt today from Mr.
Oh, did
Cumber.
You? Yeah, but that's nothing to do with Comic House. That's our lovely friend, Cumber. But if you self-publish your own comic and you want another avenue of putting it out there, then you can list it on Comic House for free and start selling there. And also, if you've got digital copies of your books, it's never been more easy to upload your work onto the Comic House app, which we talk about every week, that we use all the time. Yeah. It's a brilliant subscription service that's being updated, and the database is just growing all the time. We've heard lots of indie creators that we see at conventions talk about, you know, how good it is being on there, and they're so glad they're on there. What sort of stuff have they got on there at the moment, Dan?
You've got the Indifference Engine Volume 1, Jamshide 3, Miskatonic High Volume 1.
Was that another Jam reference?
No. What's happened to our world? That's proof that we're robots. That's proof that you're robots and I'm not.
Impossible Volume 1, The Young Sherlock Holmes Adventures, Surrealsville 16, The Super Fun Adventures of Jax and The Lady and the Lost World.
Do they release Surrealsville every week? Because every week they seem to have a new issue out, don't they?
There's a lot of it, yeah.
I mean, I haven't read any of it. I'm presuming that's a creator who's put out a lot of issues of their comic, and flipping good on them. And, you know, it just makes sense to put them all on Comic House. Plus, yeah, I think staggering it is better as well. Rather than putting it all on at once, I think...
Never put it all in at once.
Exactly. Any other life lessons, Danny?
I think it was some later.
But I mean, so do you really think it's better to put it on staggered and not just like stick all in one go? Or
personally, I would slightly stagger it. I mean, we staggered it with the awesome comics issues, but we had them at conventions and stuff. We were actively selling them at shows. So
and it reminds people. I think if you put issue one on, and then you put issue two on, people go back to issue one. They see issue two. You know, yeah. I think it's like. It's a bit like retweeting something with a comment. You go back to it, don't you, almost,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. If you've got it, for instance, just say you do a mini-series and you collect it, put the collection on rather than doing the, you know, individual issues, maybe. You know, because, I don't know, it's hard to say now. I think that's probably a topic we need to talk about. The binge-reading mentality. Yeah. I mean,
well, this is what I was thinking. Like, if you can just read issue one, but you can read issue 1 to 5 and you're getting into it, then that's, you know, that can be quite good. Just do that.
I think, you know, there are definite different sort of plans and methods you could have for putting your comics on comic, you know, on any sort of digital sort of database, I think.
It's the same way with, like, I'm going to make the fucking TV reference, Netflix or something, when they dump a whole series on, you just plow through it, or this episodic week after week.
Yeah.
I guess it does create more of an event if you, like, one's there, and then two's there like a week later or a couple of months later.
Yeah. I think, like you say, Dan, I think a week's great as well because it's that weekly sort of, you know, you're not waiting months for the next issue.
No.
I think it's a good way to, I mean, Surrealsville, how many issues did you say, Dan?
16.
Yeah. Whereas if you put 16 issues of that all on at once, would that be too much for would people?
Yeah, no, 16's probably a bit too many, but yeah.
Yeah. Another thing as well, it's like it depends on the comic. I mean, if it's kind of like a story, that kind of a narrative that goes forward, that's fine. If it's a humor comic, maybe I wouldn't want to read 16 issues of a 3-panel humor thing. Do you know what I mean?
You don't want to laugh that much, do you, Dan?
Yeah, sort of give myself hernia or something. But you know what I mean?
It's not good to be happy, is it?
No, God, no.
No, we don't promote it on this show. But we do promote Comic House, which for
nice.
only £3 a month, you get access to those digital comics and even more.
So seamless now. It's just like the naturally, you know, good at it, isn't he?
When you step behind the curtain and you see it in action, it's something else, frankly. You know?
Yeah.
It's actually Surrealsville 17 on the site.
Oh, so, okay. Wow. Bloody hell. So there,
Rob's gone.
You know,
mad.
We need to check it out, and you people need to check it out. So go on to comichouse.com, find out more. There's a 14-day free trial, and you can get stuck in and read comics. And
I'm going to review Surrealsville on the next show.
That's a promise.
Our next show, which won't be a Thought Bubble special, we just want to put the heads up now, because we're recording early because we will be at Thought Bubble or travelling back from it.
On the Sunday,
On the Sunday and Monday. So it's just going to be a Three Amigos show, and we're going to do a sort of, not review intensive, it's going to be like just a whole recommendation rumble, basically.
It's fair to say we've got a few piled up, haven't we? We've had a few... Yeah. Yeah. That we haven't got to yet, so we're going to use that to
And you've got 17 issues of Surrealsville to go through.
Frankly. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Dan, get on it.
And I don't know if you've heard of it. We've got to talk about Skellibob.
Skellibob. No, before we start talking about that.
Yes.
Tony was out and about as we said on last week's show, and you're at MCM. And we promised everyone the Tony Esmond view from the Turnbuckle. So, take it away, Tony.
Firstly, I'd like to give a big thank you to Dan's friend, whose name I've forgotten, who brought me a cup of tea.
Yes, Anem. I sent her on a special mission.
Yeah, that was nice.
Get Tony a cup of tea.
And the lady just turned up at the table and said, oh, I've got you a cup of tea. And I went, have you? And she went, yeah, I'm a friend of Dan's. And then we had a long talk about how Dan walks, because she was very impressed by it as well. And she's very nice of her, and she brought
what
me a tea. Super
how
nice.
He walks?
You know, when he walks around the convention, I said, it's a shame he's not here. He could do around the convention.
Do a walk.
I says, he does this walk. She says, he does that one in the office.
Yeah, that's outrageous. I'll speak to her tomorrow.
Was she going to MCM
just so you
anyway,
walk
Dan?
Into the desk and be like, oh, yeah. Fucking hell, he's coming in.
He's doing the walk again.
Hand, in, the pocket, hand in the pocket.
Yeah, he just walks around again. Morning.
Yeah,
giving the
nice.
Finger guns and the winks to everyone.
And before I get
morning,
into it,
Steve. Nice weekend.
Yeah. Before I get into it, I was going to be there with Zoe. Zoe from my office at No Brow, but she's not very well. So get well soon,
oh,
Zoe.
Get well soon.
There you go.
Get well soon, Zoe. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys have met Zoe, haven't you? I can't remember. I think you have.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could be wrong though.
Yeah. And I manned the table with this other list of people: Eula, Tristan, Emily, Peony, and Satu. So they were all good eggs as well. We had Hamish Steele did a signing. I know you're a fan of Hamish's stuff, aren't you, Tom?
I am, yeah. No, it's good. It's very good. His Pantheon stuff's fantastic, frankly.
Yeah, he's doing... Yeah, he was. There's a rumour he might be doing another one. I don't know what I can say yet. So he had the second Dead Endier out, which was going down a storm, so he did some signings there. Gareth Hopkins was a great helper and came by for a chat. So that was pretty good.
Oh, excellent.
When is he never a good helper? Yeah. He's the best.
Was he an MCM helper?
Yeah, he was with the Orange.
Ah, brilliant.
Yeah. Jesus, he's legit.
Yeah, in fact, he was in charge of someone we're going to talk about in a second, or looking after someone we're going to talk about in a second. We had a table, smaller table, but did the same business, strangely enough.
Okay, interesting, yeah.
Last May, we were behind the Funko, which is obviously like Chaos. This year, this time round, so it was the winter, the autumn show, we were near a Comic Village.
Okay,
right.
Which I think is a better place for us. I have to say, there were quite a few comic dealers there.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, there were. There was maybe four, maybe five, like, back issue, cheap bins, sort of 50p bins kind of sellers there, which is pretty good. The Travelling Man had a huge stall there, like a massive, took up a whole aisle stall. And they would turn around with their Avery Hill had a stall, BHP had a stall, we had a stall. Yeah, it was... I actually think if you took the whole of the comic content out of MCM and put it anywhere else, it'd be bigger than any other comic convention in the country. Genuinely. It's a big deal now. I was pleased about that. I mean, there's the usual people who just go there to buy plastic crap. You know, there's a going on. There's cosplayers. We go out into the main hallway, which I didn't do much of. But if you go out into the main hallway, there's an awful lot of people in the main aisle who you've never seen before. Do you know what I mean? So they just go there to parade up and down and have a coffee and, you know, maybe nip to the Funko stall and back. There's a lot of people who don't frequent the comic area. But it's not too bad. I'm going to say it was all right. You know, I mean, we did all right. We were very busy for most of the time. I think what you've got to get used to, if you do it in the future and you've not done it before, is if you get there on the Friday, unless there's people collecting stuff, you are going to be quiet for maybe 1 or 2 hours. And then it hots up because a lot of people do a circuit, you know, and they come back. Stuff.
Yeah.
I think goes for a lot of conventions actually, I think that, you know. You guys agree or
what, yeah, have you like more than one day?
No, I mean if you go in early then people don't immediately rush in and buy off.
Yeah.
I think always like doing a dry run is pretty common in these things, you know?
Yeah.
Like you unless you've got a particular shopping list, you always do like end up doing like a dry run first, just sort of, you know, say hello and then go up shopping done afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. I was in there a couple of hours early each day because it takes quite a long time to set our stall up because we've got a lot of books and shift rounds and posters and giveaways and all that sort of thing. So it has to get the till ready and all that sort of thing.
Do you have to break down at the end of every day?
No, I cover up and break down and I did a sales report at the end of every day. So I go away and do a takings, what sold, what didn't, what I'm going to change for tomorrow, what's a giveaway, what we're going to do as a deal. I do like an email report on each.
Oh, brilliant.
Okay.
Yeah, it's quite a lot to it. So I'm usually not finished to sort of 9:30, 10 by the time I get home, you know.
Did you remember your high-vis jacket?
Yes, did that, high-vis, and I had some sort of shoes on that looked like they had steel toe caps. and sort of managed to move in. Security there are, as usual, a pain in the butt, you know.
Yeah.
I've got one of those like foldable trolleys. It breaks down to something the size of a briefcase, you know, with wheels that fold in. Yeah. And I was trying to carry it back in to get ready to, you know, pack up. And they said, no, you can't take that in, mate. And I said, well, why? And they said, you're not allowed trolleys. I said, well, it's not. It says two wheels on the floor. It's fine. And there's this big sort of, I basically talked them into a logic trap where they had to let me in or got really bored of me talking to them, you know. but one of the excuses I used was, mate, there's people up there with massive swords and wings and you won't let me carry this up the stairs, you know. And he went, oh, mate, go on in.
Just go through,
Yeah. And those things. Now, I do have a little bit of a moan. And it's not a moan, it's more like something that I think is becoming more prevalent. Now, they had some good comic guests there. So they had Jim Shooter, who hilariously had a folder of some of his lively memos that he wrote whilst at Marvel. He sort of Gareth was chatting to me, so he was saying he's sort of owning the slightly bad behaviour he exhibited as editor-in-chief, you know, slightly megalomaniacal sort of behaviour. But but George Perez was there. Love George Perez, you know, George Perez, top guy, you know, one of the big comic guys. You know, he's got to be, he's top five, if not top 10, definitely, you know, up there somewhere. So I didn't really get much time to get away from the table. So I went looking for George and I couldn't find him. I think he was taking a break. So I'm thinking, oh, I really want to meet George. I've not met him before. And then I heard someone saying from just behind my table, oh no, I've never drawn the Kingpin. And I'm like, oh, that sounds like George Perez. And so I went around there, and it was George basically standing amongst a load of cosplayers. There was an Elektra, a big Kingpin guy, a few others standing there, and he was explaining to him that he'd never drawn it. And the look on this bloke's face, this Kingpin's face, was like, who are you, mate?
Oh, fucking hell.
God, Christ alive.
And then I heard, as I got closer, I heard George trying to explain to him who he was, you know? And it literally broke my heart, you know, like, oh, this is like so sad. So I ended up pulling George over to the table, having a chat with him, and Satu took a picture of us and everything, and it's all very exciting, which I then sent to Tom because I was so excited, which you enjoyed, didn't you, Tom?
I got pretty excited too, frankly.
So anyway, so that happened, and he sort of walked off, and he was lovely guy. And then I was standing at my table the following day, and quite a few creators were coming over and having a chat. And I probably, there was four creators at the table at one point, you know, because I had someone working with me, they were serving, I was sort of chatting to them. And two of those creators, definitely, who are people we know, I won't name them, people we know, and are busy creating comics in the small press and crossing over into the mainstream. And they didn't know who he was either.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
He's now, like one of those artists that's hard not to know him.
Yeah.
If you know your onions kind of thing.
Yeah. Now, some people might say, well, you don't need to know all the mainstream people if you're making...
No, you don't.
Okay. But then again, he is of such a standing that it's comparable to me to something like, if you're a playwright, you've got to know who Shakespeare is.
Yeah,
you know,
so like getting into film school and then saying out who's Scorsese.
Yeah, exactly. Like that. Yeah. Exactly. Or if you're if you're a poet and you don't know T.S. Eliot is, or do you know, it's that sort of thing.
Yeah.
What's your line there, Tony? Is it like, okay, well, look, you've got all this great stuff to look forward to?
I say, well, I sort of found myself explaining to them who he was. And, you know, I was saying, well, people probably know him for the Teen Titans, but Crisis of Infinite Earth, some of his favourite stuff is the Avengers stuff that he did for me. You know, and you find yourself,
didn't he draw all the Judas stuff and Teen Titans?
The characters, you know, Raven and Starfire, and we could help create them, you know.
And also, in my mind, he's the greatest artist in terms of when you see those, like a huge poster that's got like 500 characters on it from Marvel, DC, whatever. I think the ones I normally spring to mind are usually is DC ones. But, you know, anyone who's drawn a crowd scene or has tried to do quite a few characters in one piece.
Yeah,
that's a lot of work, and George Perez is hands down the best at doing that.
Yeah, I agree, man, completely. And he revels in it; he loves it. You know, and to be fair, okay. So neither of these people appeared very interested. You know, they weren't interested. And
for me, it's not the not knowing It's the attitude in reaction. If I don't know someone, I'm like, okay, and then I'll want to go forth and discover them a bit more.
Yeah,
I'll be looking him up on the phone. Well, if someone's saying to me, "Oh no, he's such a big, you need to know this geezer, he's brilliant," you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you think that look it up on your phone or go and, you know, go and look for something or, you know, come back. Yeah. But I'll tell you what it's comparable to is I work with a lady called Peony. She's half my age, basically. Do you know what I mean? But she's a really good comic creator. She's a lovely artist. And we get on like a house on fire, and she is not from the scene, not from the 2000 AD scene at all. So we get the lift down to the basement carrying our boxes with John Wagner. And I introduce her to John, and John and I are having a chat, and we're talking about Rock of the Gods. And we met John at Leamington, didn't we? He's lovely. Yeah, we love him, and he's like really nice guy. And she was saying, "Oh, was that one of your comic mates, Tony?" And when we got out of the lift, I said, "Oh, that was John Wagner, who created Judge Dredd." And she was so excited to have met him.
Wow.
And then when I saw her again, I saw her at the signing on Friday. She was repeating to people how she'd met John Wagner, and I thought, "Yeah, that's the enthusiasm."
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not like some bloke going, "Oh yeah, George Perez, yeah, whatever. Anyway, I've got this new comic out. It's about Halloween." You're thinking, "Oh fuck's sake." Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So that's my moan.
Fair enough.
Yeah. The other highlight, I got to meet someone who is the representative for L. Ron Hubbard, who did kind of refer to him as if he's still alive, which I did look into it. And I think if you're a Scientologist, you believe that he is now a creature of pure energy called a Thetan, you know.
Okay.
So he did sort of we're now friends, me and this guy, we're top friends. I believe he's going to recruit me to be a top member of the Scientologist. And he gave me a thumb drive with the whole of Battlefield Earth on it. It was really kind of him.
You've already read that, haven't you?
I've
read Battlefield Earth.
It's quite dull, I have to say. Yeah, I read it years ago, but I gave him a copy of the Hoare Chronicles.
So that's probably why you haven't heard back from him.
Maybe that's the reason. Although we are now friends on LinkedIn.
Maybe that's obviously, he sats him when Samaritans come round.
But he knew Heinlein and all these people, A.V. Van Vogt and all these, you know, like the real sort of classic sci-fi.
Yeah, sci-fi. Okay, interesting. Yeah, do you reckon he had an interest in sci-fi and that was his in?
Maybe. Like,
This Battlefield Earth stuff's great. Like, what else is on offer?
Yeah. Oh, look, Dianetics.
Yeah.
I did look him up because you can look up people who are members of the Scientology cult because they have this sort of trying to be transparent after all the grief they've had. And you can look him up and see how far they've got up their bridge, the bridge of them sort of learning stuff. And he's quite high up. He was quite a high up guy. Yeah. Right. It was, he wasn't bullshit. He was an older guy. But we had like a good 20 minute of talking about sci-fi writers and stuff like that. You know, the old classic sort of 50, 60, 70 sci-fi guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All these sort of people. Yeah. And I saw Peony on Friday again, as I just said, and she said, "Oh, you're going on about your science fiction Scientologist mate again, are you?"
She's quite sharp, isn't she?
Tristan, little shout out to Tristan, who had his mind blown. He's he works in the office. He's one of the designers, sort of thing. And he came along, and he had a number of pictures taken with people, which I may have forwarded a couple of the pictures we had in the day to you guys.
Yeah.
One of which got rudely changed by Cliff Cumber.
I don't think I saw that.
That said boner with an arrow pointing somewhere.
I can imagine where that was pointing.
Yeah. Downstairs.
Talking of Cliff, have you listened to his new podcast?
Yes.
Love it, man. Yeah. Love it. Oh. Yeah.
Brilliant.
He's brilliant, isn't he? Yeah.
So smooth as well.
He is very smooth guy, isn't he?
Oh, wow. It feels like he should narrate audiobooks or something.
They must love his accent out there.
I was wearing his Emotional in My Pants t-shirt today. It's a little tribute to him.
He'll be on the show in the future, so there you go.
It's called Unencumbered, for those that look for it. Sort of 15-minute little snack bites of commentary about one single creator. And they're funny. Yeah, they're good stuff.
Yeah, they're really good. Fantastic. Yeah.
So that was my MCM. Overall, a better experience than last time. Overall, a better experience than most times, to be fair.
Nice.
I enjoyed it. It was busy. It's because I'm in there Thursday setting up with all the, you know, the builders and that. And it's a real marathon. You know, just when you're driving home and you've got a load of crates to unload into your garage and you're thinking, I don't know if I can manage to do that. I'm so tired. You know, it's like that. But it was all right, and we did well, and I got the word out about a lot of our books. I mean, Hilda's our big seller there, as you expect. But next up, Thought Bubble, which is a whole different ball game.
That's a whole different ball game indeed.
Yeah,
you'll get some more info about that in the shout-outs.
Yeah.
But before that, let's crack on with this week's topic. Yeah. We thought we'd, as Tom has just released or just started a webcomic, we thought, what better time to talk about webcomics? So we've spoken a bit about them before. We've had a couple of shows with a couple of different creators talking about different sides of webcomics, etc. And certainly webcomics, that particular side of like comics is as popular as ever.
Yeah.
Even more so, some may say. What do you think, Dan? What do you think? Webcomic popularity?
Yeah, it's kind of it just doesn't seem to stop. Yeah.
No. It changes form quite often as well.
Yeah. You never know quite what it is or like, you know, the developments in it. I mean, it's tech at the end of the day, so you know it's always moving forward. But like we say,
I'd hazard a guess. And I don't know about this sort of thing. I don't understand this world of computers, but I'd hazard a guess that the views on web comics worldwide are much bigger than the reads of actual comics.
I would say that.
Yeah.
I think it's free.
And
you look at the social media accounts of web comics. You know, they're usually pretty high. Instagram and stuff like that, but we'll talk about that in a bit. But Tom has just started releasing weekly web comics and all that entails, we thought it'd be a good opportunity to talk about how to get started, some motivation for the format, and more. We've got some comments and questions from listeners or people on the social media or whatever. Even if you're not a listener, thank you very much for your input. We've made a little list that we're going to work through. We had quite a lot, so if we don't get through all the comments or questions or whatever, we're ever so sorry, but as always, you can continue the conversation when we post this on the Awesome Comic Talk on Facebook.
So
keep the conversation going there. But before we get stuck into all of that, let's start with the guest himself. I bet he's worried right now. He's thinking, oh god, I've been fearing this moment. But Tom, just tell us a bit about your webcomic and actually what made you decide to go that avenue and actually sort of start making a webcomic.
So Skelly Bob is so okay, if we take a little step back, I started listening to you guys about episode 50 and kind of just really got into the idea of wanting to make a comic, and then got terrified about trying to store all the print copies. So
totally understandable.
Essentially, I just sort of looked into how I could do what's the easiest way to do this? What was the lowest barrier to entry? And like looking at what Vanguard does and all these other, I was basically decided to try going to webcomics.
Yeah.
So I had a crack at it initially with like a pun based one. I ended up burning out on it. And essentially, Skelebob was the way I kind of started doing pixel art about six, maybe 8 months ago.
Yeah.
And it just really enjoyed it. Just a really fun way to draw. And it worked really well in comic form and went from there, really.
You probably did the most complicated one I've ever seen of that style of artwork in the Kirby thing that Adam Fowler put out.
Actually, sideways.
Oh my God.
I got sick by the end of that thing, frankly. So this was for Kirby's 102nd birthday, I did initially it was just going to be like a crowd scene. So I thought, okay, I'll do Kirby in like 50 characters. And I thought, well, it's 102nd birthday, so I'll do 102 characters.
But you're kicking yourself later for that.
Oh, fuck, yeah. But it was fun. It was really fun. So that's kind of the idea, really. So it was just trying to tell a story in an interesting way. And like, it kind of clicked me when I was listening to one of the many, many podcasts that John Tucker's on. And he's just saying how there's no real rules for comics, you know?
Yeah.
They can just be whatever you, to an extent, you know, they can be whoever you want it to be. And I was like, oh, yeah, fucking hell. I can like, you know, I can do a pixel art one. I can look into how I can present this in different ways. It doesn't have to be a standard UK print size thing, you know?
Yeah.
So that's it. Yeah. And it kind of went from there, really.
I mean, you say the pixel art, and you know, it's great the art you're doing for it. We've talked a little bit about pixel art before, and I know, like, I'm a fan of it, but sometimes it's a short, you know, some people, we've seen some comics before, and we've talked about them.
Have we talked about some?
There's one particular one, which is very much just shortcuts. Do you know what I mean? It's just a couple of poorly done pixel graphics and then just seemingly copy and pasted, which you don't do. I mean, if you seriously, folks, if you see his Kirby piece, Jesus Christ.
Because there's sprite comics where they use sprites from like Sonic and make up their own stories, and it's like, okay, that's what you want to do, but it's not my cup of tea. But there is a lot of big audience for it.
There is. I mean, there is definitely. And like, I redraw every sprite every time.
Yeah.
Like, and I have a model. I work for a model like everyone else would do, but I redraw them all and, you know, mix and match. And yeah, because you're right, it is going to look incredibly dull if I'm repeating the same fucking skeleton 20 times in the, you know.
Yeah. I think a webcomic is almost the natural fit for that sort of look and feel for a strip.
The thing I really want to do is I want to, like, it's a digital medium, right? So I can animate panels. Yeah. And I'm not talking about animating like a full, you know, like a Netflix
cartoon
show.
Or something. Yeah.
Like I'm a just flame talking in the background or something.
Perfect. Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Or a bit of rain or just something like a swing of a sword. Something to imply movement. Pardon?
No, good. I'm green, man.
One of the things that kind of I don't find it frustrating, but about webcomics is there seems to be a lot of kind of software and tech to hand, but they've not really evolved that much from what they are. They're still like a page of graphics when you go panel to panel. I mean, some you do like one panel per click and stuff like that, but essentially it's the same kind of, it's a comic. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's not like kind of a more interactive experience. We've seen stuff like that. What's that app one we had where, is it Neon Wasteland?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Neon Wasteland. But even that, like, hats off to the technical side of it. It didn't, the animated thing, it didn't really work for me. It didn't add anything. But it's a different line. Mm. But it's kind of like when we did that Watchmen animated thing, I was like, oh, what's the point of this?
It
was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Our eyes and our brains do that. And when we read a comic anyway, sometimes you don't need that. But having that little buzz, dude, like with the flame, that really sort of drew my eye to it.
That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, but you can almost think a bit like, so take Guided View.
Yeah.
Guided View, you could create on a webcomic, recreate on a webcomic, and then that would tell the story in a different way.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, we could, like, there was a, there's various platforms you can put your comic out on. There's one called B-Comics, which you can literally do Guided View on. So you can zoom into panels, go from there to other bits, and so you can tell, you can get the timing of the story how you want it to go.
Yeah.
So excuse me for being thick here, but would you have to pay to put it on there and they do it, or would you?
So that one, no. Basically, you host it on their site. So essentially you're generating content for their site, which then sells advertising.
Okay, yeah. I get you.
And then you just almost, you imagine your page in front of you, and you say, okay, I want them to spend 2 seconds on this panel, move to panel 2 and 3, make that big, you know, and that kind of jazz.
Mm. Okay, I get you.
So you can literally code in the guided view that way.
Right. So when you say code, it's not, you don't have to know code.
No. Yeah, it's all like click and drag and that kind of jazz.
Mm. Right, I get you. Yeah, I can do stuff like that. So even that, I can manage just about.
No. So guided view doesn't seem that like, I imagine it's only someone dragging a box over to things. Yeah. So you go there, go there, go there. I don't understand why. I don't know. Perhaps they make a big deal of it over in Amazon, but in Comixology, it doesn't seem that kind of terribly. Oh my God, what a fucking thing!
Yeah. Anyway.
I mean, then again, every week they have to do guided view on a lot of releases.
Loads. Yeah.
They? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's got to be a temptation just to go straight. You know, just I'm so bored of this today. I'm just going to go straight to a nipple or a crotch or something. Yeah. You know, with the next swipe, just to confuse them. You know.
I said, oh, fuck, I've got to read 20 comics today. What a drag.
Yeah.
I don't know, there's a lot of dross out there, man. If you've got
to... Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I just got a shout out for comics that are dropping at Thought Bubble, and I can agree to that one, my friend. Yeah.
So, mentioning no names. No.
Yeah.
I totally threw off my train of thought then. I was just thinking, what is he talking about? But obviously, you decided to do a webcomic, and you had done a minor thing before. But in terms of research, if someone wanted to start a webcomic, what is the best step for them to take? Obviously, I'm guessing you treat the creation of it, you know, the writing, the art, you know, putting it all together. That's a separate box right now. But then you have to compartmentalize it. So there's that, the creation, but there's the admin, the hosting, you know, where you're going to put it. That's completely different kettle of fish, isn't it? So at what point do you start that section of it?
I think to the sense it depends on the kind of story you want to tell.
Mm.
So for example, if you're telling a short form, you know, easily shared, I don't want to say like Sarah Scribbles, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You look into, you know, is it best spot on a hosting site? Are you going to look into, you know, basically you want to do that almost at the very beginning. As you're getting together the story, then you want to be looking into how you're going to be putting out there, frankly.
Yeah.
Because it seems more some platforms are more friendly towards one type of comic as opposed to others. And a bit of research, you can't really, you've got to do it, really, because you'll end up sticking your humor comic on a site that does well in manga or anime, and you won't get any readers.
Does it benefit you to, purchase a URL sooner rather than later? Because most of these places, and certainly like with podcasts as well, if you've got the URL, you can link it through to whatever site is putting out your work, isn't it?
I mean, you might be amazed to hear that skellybob.com was available from the very beginning. Was
not available. I can't believe that. Yeah.
They missed a trick there.
I think, URLs are so cheap comparatively.
Yeah.
Like, there's a sunk cost fallacy, like if you're... And how many false starts you're having when you're making any comic?
Yeah.
I mean, you have this idea, you think it's going to be the next hot shit, and then it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the, it's, I think when you've hit a point where you're starting to generate a backlog and you think you've got something going, then look into URLs and that can adjust.
Yeah. And certainly you can be, a little bit, sometimes you can be a bit clever, but it might cause some problems. I remember one of the most unique ones I've got, the two ones that come to mind, obviously Rising Sand.
Which, it's fantastic,
But that's risingsand.glass. Which ties into their story, but that's quite an unusual URL. And God, what the other ones? That's...
Was it dot fail?
Yes,
dot fail was. Drugs and Wires. Yes, of course. Yeah, which is another. Yeah, but that's dot fail. So they're two of the most unique ones that I've seen. But by doing that, and we're all creative people, and sometimes what seems like a great idea. Maybe a bit trickier than, it might be like, oh God, that might cost more than a .com or a .co.uk .web. So you need to think about, the costs of things or what it's meant to achieve and things like that. I mean, the two books that we just talked about.
And what comes up if you Google it,
The two books we just talked about are big successes and still going to this day, they don't have that problem. But if you're just starting out,
I've also mentioned this one 1,000 times. Research the name of your comic. Like, for instance, I've called mine Vanguard, but there's a massive Japanese card game called Card Fighter Vanguard. There's an African news network called Vanguard. The Eric Larson comic Vanguard. So, if you do a search for that, you're gonna have to struggle against multinational corporations.
Yeah.
So,
would you say? I mean, obviously. You wouldn't change it now, but do you think if you had known that going into it, you maybe would have changed the title?
Well, I kind of did, but I thought I didn't give it that much consideration. I think I asked a few people, what should I call it? Because the kind of name of it really isn't important. You could call the comic and the name of the team anything, really, because it's not like a massive central... Once you've named them, you can on you go, and it kind of gains the weight. So it could have been anything from the beginning.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
I looked up the Hoare Chronicles, and it's not a great name.
I can imagine.
Yeah, but you. Yeah,
I was going to name it. I was going
to
name it Gilf POV, but I didn't go with that.
One tweet I mentioned, because this kind of it goes to the very start of your comics, from Damien from Art at 9-2, which is, how different is the process of creating a webcomic from a hard copy comic? For example, with different sizes and colours.
Why are you laughing at hard copy?
Because I've already said this again. I already told this question. And how easy to convert from one to the other? More importantly, what are things to avoid as a newbie? I think we covered this similar question on previous episodes.
Yeah.
But if you want to print your comic at the end, make sure you do it as a high res, and then you can kind of save it down for the web, do what you want with it. Obviously, if you're working for the web, you're going to be working in RGB, which is red, green, and blue, and then CMYK for print. It's easy enough. There's more of a color range in RGB, but with modern tech, you kind of convert it relatively easy. There's a few colors you've got to watch out for.
I think maybe it's naive of me to say, but you only really got to worry if you're doing something that's really murky or dark, like browns and gray. Dark.
So if you're doing a swamp or something.
When you make that conversion from RGB to CMYK, you're going to have to watch that. But
you've got to watch on the kind of the high pinks and cyans and stuff. Yeah. They can look great on screen, and you try and print and it's a bit muted. But if you kind of worked a high res and then saved down for the web, you can't go wrong. Obviously, the other stuff you can you got to consider is if you're doing it like a normal comic size page, you're not going to really have too much of a problem. But if you've got like one panel comic that you're doing daily or whatever, how are you going to format that for print? Are you going to be able to get three of those on the page or six of those on the page? Or it's one of those things I feel like one that, like you're hosting, you should consider that at the beginning before you get into the creating side of it. Because you might like get 50 strips under your belt and think, you know what, why am I printing this? And then you realize you've done it all in 72 DPI and that just will look shit when you try and print it. Yeah. So it's just one of those things to kind of like ready, aim, fire as opposed to ready, fire, aim kind of business.
Yeah. I mean, Tom, what format? Yours are sort of square pages, is that right?
They are, yeah. So it's all done on Procreate, all done 300 DPI, but it's all pixel stuff. So and how many pixels are you saving here, frankly? Stupidly, I maybe could have heard Dan say that I haven't prepped a print at all. In terms of it's a square page, it's really designed for web only. I'm looking at animating some of the panels. Yeah. It's not, you know, that's so.
But you've got like, I mean, you've just started, haven't you? I mean, I think if. If you go start a webcomic with the maybe thinking, I think printing it should be almost later down the road. You don't start a webcomic thinking.
You might not never want to print it.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll see. And that's what I'm telling myself at the moment anyway, you know?
Yeah.
But with the square things like that, you can work something out.
Yeah.
What consider of, you know, like there's that website where they have the long scrolling comics.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's like, you've got to work it out to do that, because the storytelling on that is a lot different to when you'd, well, maybe you'd want to print a great big long scroll.
Yeah. I guess the audience depends on how you like to read as well, really, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
I really at the moment, I haven't gotten used to that, you know, scrolling down through a book because I like clicking to the next page. You know, I like it all being on one screen, as it were, and then just, you know.
Yeah, and I kind of like to be able to keep it sometimes, and it's all right for Dan. I only read a few, and Dan's is one of the few I read, and I know that Dan's is going to complete his and put his in a book, so I know I'll have it, you know. And sometimes I might want to click and save. We're talking about what you're talking about one in a bit, aren't you, V, about one scrolling web comic, and the creator of that sent it to me in broken down pages, and I saved it in my Dropbox because I really liked it, you know.
Yeah.
That one was actually one of the rare ones where it totally worked for me, scrolling down.
Yeah.
But normally, I'm a Luddite that just, you know, I'm an old man who just likes one screen, just click to the next page. Whereas the webcomics are always evolving and moving onwards, aren't they? Say, with the, you know, using of animation and, you know, the extra fireworks and special effects people want to put in their webcomics. But the basis of a webcomic, it's just got to be a good story, hasn't it? A good comic, whatever it is, it's got to.
Yeah,
it's got to build the audience, and that's the most difficult thing, isn't it?
It's got to be a good story told in different size bites. And once you're good at doing that, in the same way that Dan starts a page and ends a page, there's kind of a start to a story and end to a story in each of your pages, aren't there? You've got to get into that somehow as well, I think.
Yeah,
like the same way, like say you've got Skellibob, and there's like a joke per thing. If you have like a joke on one page, it's a setup for one that's going to land.
It
won't work.
No,
yeah.
Not at all. I mean, like, if you think of, what's the Penguin comic that's...
Penguins.
Yeah. Like, they're all joke. None of them set up a joke for the following week. It's all it's all self-contained.
Yeah, they're like, to me, they're like newspaper strips, aren't they?
Yeah,
exactly.
That's exactly what they should. And I think that's what he wants to do with them. That's how they work for me. So you don't have to read them in any order. You can just dip in. I've got a couple of the collected editions, and they're cracking toilet reads for that. Do you know what I mean? You just sort of dip in and out.
Actually got some comments from Alan.
Haven't we? Yeah.
It's, I don't think we should class all web comics as one. I certainly think the Penguin or other strip-based comics are hugely different from, say, an adventure storyline. The pros are you get an audience quickly, and the cons, the signal to noise and finding the audience. His advice on starting a webcomic, build a buffer of work so you can initially hit a regular schedule.
A lot of people say that buffer thing, don't they? That was quite a common comment. You know, I know when I was doing a webcomic, 8-9 years ago, we had probably 10 built up.
Hmm.
You know, as buffers, just for when we'd be on holiday or, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. And the script wise, probably 20. You know, so I was writing the script, sending them off.
Yeah,
they're only 3-panel gag and strips.
That's the comment that we had the most coming through.
Yeah.
That a lot of people said. For instance, Daryl Thorpe, he said, always be at least a month ahead. It's made my life a lot easier.
Well, that's a big buffer. He's an animal, isn't he? So,
but at the same time, seems like a big buffer, really isn't.
Can't go. You have that discipline and kind of when you're going to do stuff certain times.
Yeah.
I find like if you leave it to the last minute, you start making compromises because of time.
Also, it depends on what your comic is. If you're the sort of creator that's doing, I don't know, humor comics, actually, it doesn't necessarily have to be a humor comic, or any sort of comic where you can throw a page out really quickly, that's fine. If you're a creator that's doing something very detailed, very layered, there's lots of effects and stuff, comics take time. They always do. So, you know, and the professional comic artists sometimes can only do a page a week. Do you know what I mean? And that's like when they're working on it all the time. And webcomics, I mean, I don't know how many full-time webcomic people there are out there. And there's quite
I suspect there's a few, aren't there?
A few, but that's because they've learned how to maximise what they're doing. And that includes, like, not shortcuts, but figuring out the most efficient way to tell their stories and get the page up.
You also, to make a living out of a webcomic, you have to be really popular, don't you?
Yeah.
You
have to be more popular than you would be as a print comic, I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And do you have to aim it towards a group? Do you think you have to do that?
That's interesting. I'm not sure if you tell the story and then the readership finds you. To be honest, it's a nut I've certainly not cracked. Because there's some webcomics you see and you think, holy balls, they're fucking like just got an almost rabid following.
Yeah.
And obviously they're not going to tell you how to do that because that's their livelihood.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. And
it can wax and wane, can't it? You know, you can come in and out of fashion.
Yeah.
And you've still got to keep pumping it out there and keeping up to date on the social media and all that sort of thing in regards to it as well. People will be writing into you. I know we get the odd occasion where somebody will write into us and we won't reply and we'll get some kind of weird sort of passive aggressive second message, you know. People do think it's an immediate thing with the web these days, don't they, you know?
I think it depends on the type of comic to an extent. So if you think about more of the short form stuff, they naturally fall into an audience anyway.
Yeah.
So you take someone like XKCD, which falls into the science crowd, PhD comics, which is primarily, you know, academics or young academics, like control odds. There's a lot of different like gaming crowds who will eat this stuff up.
Furry's a big thing.
They're massive.
Massive. We got a message. We got a comment from a lady who does a furry comic, didn't we?
Yes, I've got it right here. I was just looking at it. If this fill time while I scroll down and find the fucking thing.
So, Tony, what would your persona be? Tony, what would your persona be?
My first furry costume, you said?
Yeah.
There was a lot of... What kind of furry animal would I be? I think about this a lot, actually.
Beaver.
I think I'd be a badger.
Oh, of course you would.
What about you, Tom?
I'd be a hamster.
Really?
Yeah, two big cheeks.
I've got it.
Okay, sorry.
Cheers for coming.
We're building with some smart there for you.
Seamless.
Yeah, good.
This is from Ellen Natalie. It's Ellen Natalie 87 on Twitter. I've been creating and publishing the comic Furry Experience for over a decade now. It's awesome how many people have enjoyed and interpreted FE over the years. But I also feel very isolated most of the time. Going out and socializing has to be a priority for your mental health.
I suppose if you're having to put that costume on and head out, it's not easy, is it?
I find this a lot, like you can be screaming into the void with the webcomics. I had a comment on Vanguard the other day saying, I never comment, but I just wanted to know that I'm here reading, I'm really enjoying it. Yeah. And they'd been doing it for years. So,
I mean,
that's the first time I've heard of it.
We get listeners like that, don't we? We get listeners that we don't know about. You know, they're not here, so they don't come and speak to us. And I kind of like the fact that
I listen
to a lot of podcasts and don't comment. And,
true.
You lovely people out there, you know Dan Butcher. You see him at a convention and stuff. You know Vanguard, you're reading it. And I know you started to do more print books, but you hadn't done conventions for quite some time before you started doing it.
No, years before we did it for the ACP.
Yeah. It can be a very like making a webcomic, and obviously it is almost the complete one man band because you have to be everything and you have to constantly shout about it. I mean, if you think, you know, if you've got a Kickstarter for 30 days and you think oh god, this is so hard doing the hard sell, I guess for a webcomic you have to do that.
It's quite nice like that. There's a good and a bad side of that, isn't there? Because I quite like the fact that, I mean, it's one of the reasons I'm trying to learn to draw at the moment is so I can do my own. Yeah. But I like the fact that you're completely self-sufficient, aren't you?
Yeah.
You can make something. It can be beautiful and interesting and insightful, and you can put it out. And you're not beholding to anyone.
No.
But there's obviously the downside of that is what that lady was just saying there, is that you're kind of isolated slightly, aren't you?
Yeah.
If that's what you're doing and you're spending your social life, you know, and you're probably at work in the day and going home and drawing at night, then there isn't a certain isolation to it as well. But we make sacrifices for our art, don't we, you know? Mm.
It's a hobby. Do you know what I mean? It's something I do for
fun.
Yeah,
don't do it if you hate it. Yeah,
no, that's, I mean, I enjoy what I do.
Yeah.
Like before we came on today, I was drawing another panel for a comic, and I was like, yeah, this is what I enjoy doing.
Yeah.
This isn't like a, you know, it's no one's forced me to do it. It's not a chore. It's something I enjoy.
Yeah. As soon as it becomes a chore, it's just
you've got to reconsider what you're doing.
Yeah.
Oh, and I would like to say it's been a joy. I've worked with Tom. It's been a joy, and we had fun, didn't we, dude?
We had loads of fun. That's really
Tom's
good.
Tom's in the Hawk Chronicles. Yeah. He's part of the inner circle. Yeah.
Some of the ones I'm envious of is the web comics that have more than one creator involved, like a writer, artist, or you know, a couple of them, because then they can bounce ideas back off another. They're both in it.
Yeah.
So one of the things if you're a single creator like myself and Tom, you not only got to make the bloody thing, you got to promote it. And one of the things I've kind of sort of considered or thought about a lot this year is I enjoy creating comics way more than any of the other aspect of it. Like I love the drawing, the colouring, the writing, whatever, the creative aspect, but the kind of the marketing stuff and just all the other stuff of it, I'm like, oh, fucking hell.
It can be a bit of a chore, can't it, when you've got a press release or something like that.
I always think it's interesting when bigger names as well decide to do a webcomic. And sometimes you maybe won't see them promote it so much. Do you know what I mean? They just sort of do it, and I guess, you know, at the same time, I don't follow webcomics so much. It's something I will be doing more. But when you've got your ear to that ground, are you more aware of like new series coming along? You know,
We're in a bubble and they're in a bubble and everyone's in a bubble today, aren't they? Yeah, definitely.
Maybe it's like, as a writer, you just want to kind of, say you've got a plot you think's dynamite, but no comic company would pick it up or think suitable. There's something you could do. Like, if you was a big name, I'm sure loads of artists would say, well, I wouldn't mind drawing that with you because that gets me exposure and it gets you to scratch that itch of getting that comic out there. So it's a kind of quid pro quo kind of deal on that one.
I mean,
I think sometimes you just need that bit of artistic in your life, art in your life.
Yeah,
you know, when you're doing a job, I mean, we all do a job that is at certain points not artistic, don't we? You know,
we need
that little bit of an extension to our life to make ourselves happy. And I think that's kind of an ideal way to do it sometimes, you know?
I mean,
I know people were down on all those coloring book stuff, but for some people, that was that itch they were scratching.
Yeah, exactly.
Being a bit creative, and they probably hadn't done that for fucking 20, 30 years.
Yeah. And I guess sometimes you'd probably be surprised at the creators that you like now started in webcomics or did their own webcomic. I mean, Daniel Warren Johnson, Space Mother.
Yeah.
He never half-assed that. And you read that, and that's an amazing sort of complete story. And now look at him.
He's got gone. Dan, Tom.
I was going to say Lumberjanes, Noel Stevenson.
Yes.
She starts off with Nomona, which is a webcomic.
Okay.
Which became a phenomenon all of itself, didn't it?
Yeah.
It did,
Ava's Demon, that's was a webcomic, and that's got picked up by, I think, it's Image.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it can be done. I mean, like...
But these are all people who probably created these stories because they wanted to do the stories. They haven't done it with the end goal of, I'm going to be picked up by Image. Yeah. I'm going to be picked up.
But you think about it, you're bringing a comic for the publisher. You've already built up a fan base for this project or title.
Yeah.
And then they bring you on board. And then depending on how much the back matter is what quality, again, that goes into that kind of the print quality.
Yeah.
They've already got product there that they're just ready to go. So it's kind of...
I really can't see a publisher picking up a web strip that begins with, I just did a bum fart and a pink balloon came out. Can you?
No.
But one day you'll make
Sadly
it.
Sadly not.
And that's a joy of small press, Tony. Like, you don't need a publisher, you can do it yourself, man.
All right, everyone. All right.
So we've got another comment here from Ludology. 2014.
He's nuts.
Yeah, Ludologist at 2014 Twitter.
Grenade in. I always hear him pulling the pin just when he asks the question.
So, do web comics contribute to Skynet and the inevitable incoming of Machine Armageddon? And what are the benefits of doing a web comic versus small press before we're all killed by AI? So that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
To be fair, like if you turn up on the convention floor and you've got the comic, no one's seen that before, you hot off the press. and no one's had a chance. When you've done the webcomic and you turn up, I presume a lot of people come in there to buy it, maybe because they've seen it before. I can't really say that because a lot of people have bought Vanguard completely blind.
We obviously had a Hamish Steele signing, and we had a launch of his book on Friday night, his new Dead Ending.
Yeah.
And that started as a webcomic, and that got a good following. You know, people coming to the table saying, oh, I was with the webcomic from the beginning. It's almost like a little badge of honour, you know?
Mm. Yeah, nice one.
Yeah, that does well for us around that. Bringing that crowd over into the print book, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I guess it's like you're promoting yourself with a webcomic by getting these pages and getting people hooked. So when the print copy comes along, your audience is already kind of locked in, hopefully.
Mm. Yeah. The other thing is like you can get automatic. So you can make a page, you can put it out there, you can repeat that. It's, you're always producing something out there.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, there's something quite nice about that as well. You're not waiting, you know, like you don't have to ever say, oh, well, sorry, I've been quiet for the last 6 months. We're making my 48 page Magnus Opus.
Yeah.
Here's page one, here's page two. It's just, you know, you can constantly be feeding content out there, which is quite
nice. And you don't need to be an amazing artist to do a web strip.
No.
You know,
no, far from it.
You know, you can make them iconic-y little sort of caricature type drawings and stuff like that easily now, you know.
And there's different ways of doing it. I mean, I noticed some of the webcomics I read now are Instagram accounts. And it's normally some of the humour ones, but not necessarily only humour. But they work almost in that guided view sort of sense where, you know, square panel, four in a row, just every sort of week or whatever you get a new strip. And it works really well, I think.
Yeah, Todd Oliver's been doing that a bit. I've been enjoying his stuff on there. Yeah. And Joan Cornelia is Cornella is the one we've mentioned before. And that's kind of just one-off panels. I kind of like his stuff as well. And
I know the Immermans. Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
They've got the Grass of Parnassus, which is a crazy, crazy science fiction sort of Instagram comic that sometimes I think I'm on drugs sometimes when I'm looking through that. But that's going well for them. You know, there are lots of different things you can try with webcomics, which is exciting.
I go back to your art comic, Tony. XKCD is one of the biggest webcomics around, and it's stick figures.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's massive, that one, frankly, and it's amazing how.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot to be said for, and this is going to sound like putting out things into too much of a box, but the coffee table humor section. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot. There's a lot of web comics. I think Sarah Scribbles is one of them. I've got some collections of the book. I haven't read the web comic, but that pick up instant gratification. You know, have a fantastic laugh, put it down. You know, those books seem to just take off a lot of the time.
Didn't I buy you that one book, Tony the Onions one?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I follow him on Instagram as well. Yeah, I like his stuff. Yeah.
There's John Tucker sent in one. I think he mentioned, if you listen to the John Tucker episode. Mm-hmm. On Comics the Apocalypse, he talks about the Perry Bible Fellowship.
Yeah, and on our show. He talked about
And our show. Yeah. And he sent in three of his faves, which are fantastic. And there's ones like it's popped up. And I've seen that before, like on just in the wild.
Yeah. And, is that the one with screws or nails? Her husband's a hammer. Yeah. I like that sort of thing. Yeah. It's good. Yeah,
they're quite dark humor.
Enjoyed. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. I love.
Yeah. Another comment we had from Shaney. On Twitter at Shaneoid77, he also said buffer like it's going out of fashion.
Oh, I like that. Good buff.
Also, try and big your comic up when you're promoting, even if inside you may be unsure. And I think that's quite a because we're always, I think, everything we do, I think most creative people, you know, you go through the different stages, don't you? You're excited about it, you start working on it. You're still excited about it. This isn't working. Push through. You're really proud of it. You put it out. Yeah. Oh God.
Do you know what? I warm to people who say, well, you know, it's my new thing. You might not like it. I'm still warming up a bit to it and stuff like that. I warm to them more than. And now there are a few people out there who go, this is the best comic you'll ever read.
Yeah, that fucking turns me right off.
You're like, it's not. And it definitely won't be. You know,
this is going to be the best comic. When I make it, it's going to be the best thing ever. When?
Yeah.
Steady on. There's one Facebook group I'm in at the moment that just like you get a lot of that. And
I'm thinking of one particular person who's been putting the same two images out on Facebook for about 3 years now.
When are you going to make this fucking comic?
People have actually started asking him like openly, when are you doing this comic? You keep talking about it. What's happening? Yeah.
Oh dear. Another comment we got from Kristen Kiamal Evans. And my advice is someone who updates comfortably at 3 times a week.
That's good.
Four times starting in January.
Wow.
With print editions of the webcomic is to build a buffer. My first series of, I think it's 12 comic, it's xiicomic.com, is already finished at this point, and I have 600 plus pages yet to release as I build my second.
Bloody hell.
Christ. That's it's a bit like when Morecambe and Wise, it was Wise, so I've written a play, here it is, wrote it last night, and it's like 800 pages. Like that. This geezer seems to be just writing on top.
Just blasting them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was maybe an offer for this time, but there was like a post in one of these groups saying about how much you should be charging for, like, if you're a pro, you do this in small press, or you're like an independent, whatever. And it seemed way over the odds. Like, I could be charging like a better part of $200 for a page. And it's like, in a small press, you won't be getting that. I can tell you that now.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you do. I don't know. Yeah, some people pay it. Yeah.
Pass on those details, Danny.
I will do, man.
here's another one for you, Dan. Obviously, I think Tom and a lot of other people out there probably get your advice from this. We got Russell Cheese Fries. Amazing name.
Awesome name.
At Russ, Russ Scribbles, at Russ Scribbles on Twitter. He says, engage with the webcomic community. They are such a good community. Tell other creators how much you enjoy their comic. It literally means the world to them. Be kind. Do not engage with negative people.
Yeah, be professional online. You see that from the good creators out there. You see that from the likes of Bendis and people like that. They don't fucking bite, do they?
No, they're just
professional. Talk good things about comics.
And I know, Dan, you've mentioned Spider Forest, and you know there's a section of comics that you have. You know, you're part of a community that
you're the king of. I think
me and Tony don't know too much about. We don't engage with that webcomic community, but it helps you to do that, doesn't it? Would you think that's good advice?
Yeah, I mean, like just a kind of mention of another comic, like say, go check out this comic and give them a shout. Mm. Like, it goes a long way. Like, if I'd always help someone else out, trying to give them a bit of traffic, give them some new readers. You might introduce someone to that comic, and that's the best thing they've ever fucking seen. So that's an absolute pleasure to do that for people. And it's happened to me. There was a comic called Girl Power, which is regularly like one of the number one web comics in the world. And they gave me a shout out on one of their comics. And on that day, I usually get about 1,000 to 2,000 hits per day, and it went up to 80,000 in one day.
Wow.
So, bloody
hell. Bloody hell, man. You're big cheese. I told you. I knew you were.
Yeah, it didn't stick around. Like, it kind of slowly tailed off. But you can see by, like, one of the bigger comics give you a shout.
I'm a great believer, and we get that in the podcast community. Now, the podcasts that I like and I think are good, I have gotten zero problem with retweeting. I do not see them as competition. I see them
as community.
They are community, like The Lakes, That Comic Smell, The Nerds. You know, these guys, that's our people. That's our community, you know, and I will never not retweet them. And I think you've got to do the same with your webcomic. I think
Dan for the same thing, which was fantastic, frankly. It really helped out.
Yeah, really helped.
So, Tom, what are your now that you're diving into this sort of pool of comics? Well, what are your next moves, or what's the plan for you going forward? Obviously the year only has a couple of months left, but for the next 6 months, what's your plan for?
So, I'm going to go on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and go for that. So, in all seriousness, I've got a backlog of about 19.
Wow, nice one, man.
Yeah, backlog, and the idea of basically just try and keep that going.
It only seems like a couple of weeks ago that you were sending them to me when you first started, and I was thinking, oh, this is a good idea. But oh, you've done loads then.
I think I was listening to Dan talk about this, and it's all like how long does it take me to get a page out?
Yeah.
Because at the very least, you've got to get a page out a week.
Yeah.
And when that goes, you've got to be able to get something out there quickly. So yeah, I basically tried to work out, you know, how to get that down, that process down. So next thing for me is get the animation stuff sorted out, jazz up the site, and then look at I've scripted out to the end of issue one, saying issue one in quotation marks, and then work on get through issue two and just basically keep up this dark pact I've started.
So what are you doing, man? Are you working at night? You're getting home from work, having some tea, and then getting on with it? Is that kind of
lunchtime? So basically, lunchtime work. So stop at lunch, draw. So it's all done on my iPad. So I just draw at lunchtime, either draw or script or tweet, you know, all the shit, frankly, all four stages, you know, and then, yeah, just draw when I get home, frankly.
That's great. Yeah.
And just go from there. And like, I kind of also, that's all, I spent that time just working out like what points in the scripts are going to cause more time. Because the way I'm drawing stuff, because I'm drawing, like, basically change your background takes a lot longer to do, sort out. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So it's like, because I'm doing a lot of stuff which is, they can read individually, but they can read as a continuous story. So it's just trying to, you know, work out when the points are going to be, when I'm going to slow down, basically.
Yeah.
When I have to draw a crowd of 102 people, that's, you know.
Yeah. Would you enter, with something we did with the webcomic I did was we entertained like the odd guest writer. Do you ever, okay. we had a couple of guest writers just for the odd episode here, just for a bit of fun, really. Mm-hmm. Do you ever do it? You considering anything or doing, you know, getting some other people to do the art or a pin up or something like that? You know?
And if you're asking, Tony, yes, you're more than welcome.
The scale of doing Skelly Bob.
Vince, could you do like a super cut of all of them put together at the end?
Skelly Bob. Yeah.
He loves us to be the clip show.
Yeah, do you know, that's a really good idea. It's a really good idea. There's a few people who I kind of know. There's one guy who does Eat My Paint, and he does sort of short form. Basically, he takes sweets and draws them out in MS Paint. And I imagine his team would be quite good for this sort of stuff as well. So, definitely. Good idea. It's a very good
idea. Sometimes it's nice to see, you know, when you see a creator draw something of yours, or, you know, somebody who's
that's
nice.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I've said this before, like, if you want to get some traffic for your webcomic, do some fan art for... one that's bigger and similar to yours, and then give it to them, say, like, I've just drawn this. Sometimes they might do anything with it, but sometimes they'll put it on the page and say, oh, Tom over at Skelly Bob did this to me of my characters, and then they'll send you a link, and then everyone goes to see your comic.
It was a pound every time we said it, wasn't it, Tom?
If you've got a webcomic then, and then you think, right, where am I going to host it, what's the best place to do it, you know, what's your advice for people? You know, do they just create their own website and put the webcomic on there and update it? Or do they join a community like Topastic or whatever it is now and, you know, and just exclusively on there? Or, you know, there's lots of different ways to do it, isn't there?
I tried doing the whole, Topastic and B Comics and all this kind of jazz, and it pissed me off nothing, no end, like all the different requirements you needed to sort out.
Yeah,
right. Like, okay. In terms of, you know, it wouldn't just be a case of upload and go. You'd have to upload, write a description, make sure it was the right dimensions, make sure you had a thumbnail ready to go as well. And it was like, there was more work in uploading that crap than it was actually, I was getting readers. And that's why I did that from a previous one. I was like, fuck this noise. So I just ended up doing it, just toasting it myself.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, right.
You're your own boss there.
Yeah. And like, there's this idea that you can, they generate an audience, but the reality is they generate an audience for the top three.
Yeah.
Which are all sort of like, yeah.
Yeah. Because I always had mine on Drunk Duck, and that was like, I was getting a lot of readers and stuff, but obviously they're seeing all the benefits of that. But I think like someone bought out the company and the site just got gutted and half the things are broken and not working. It's like, oh, fuck this. Like, it was one of the things I was considering. And then when that happened, I was like, I just jumped ship straight from there.
Mm-hmm. I put mine on Blogspot, on my blog.
Yeah. And
it's good enough, man, and it's free. Exactly. And I can see where the traffic was coming from and what times and, you know, that sort of thing. It's pretty good.
Yeah. But again, that's almost like you're hosting it yourself, aren't you? Like, you're not beholden to it. Yeah.
But when if you do it that way, then, and, like, you know, there's lots of different communities, like Spider Forest and, what is it? Is it Hive Works? Is that what? What's the other one? There's, I swear it's Hive Works. They've got, like, a beehive sort of logo.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's, like, these different sort of communities of collections of webcomics, and certainly you can you can pitch to these people to become part of their collection.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How does that work? Your stuff is still on your site, but it just links on their site, it links through to your one. How does that work?
Yeah, it's like on my one, on Spider Forest, you kind of like, you can go to the Spider Forest site and there's all the comics there that are listed in like categories, like genres. Mm. And I think Vanguard's under like superheroes and post apocalypse. And the thing with Spider Forest is there's like a bar for entry, not everyone can be on there. Yeah. You have to submit, and then other creators review what you've done. That's even how your
it's
site
curated,
is,
isn't it? It's curated, which is a good way to.
And then
do it.
You're given sort of entry, and what we do is there's a bit of coding you drop into the top of your site, and it's like a banner that rotates, and it advertises another member of the community. So that's like one of the requirements of being a membership. And
how's that been? That's been quite a positive experience.
That's been great. Yeah, I get a lot of traffic in from there. Yeah. Okay. It's interesting because one of the commitments you have to do is to read some of these entries. And it's you kind of like someone says, like, this is my comic, here's some sample pages of the site, and you got to read through it and then discuss the pros and cons. And some of you are like, oh, this is fucking amazing. There was that comic 10 of Shatter and Blows.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that the Spider Forest thing comes up. I think it's twice a year they do it. And I said to the creator, you want to go for this, it's well worth it. And they got in, and then they're in the community and seeing all the benefits of it. And it's one of those things you can go there and ask them questions and get a lot of feedback. It's a good place to be.
And it doesn't cost anything?
Nothing, no. It's just fellow creators kind of like helping each other out.
Yeah.
I'm also in the Collective of Heroes, which is all just superhero comics. And again, that's curated, like people have to apply and... It's more of like we'll come and see you as opposed to vice versa.
But with these things. I guess you have to be actively involved in that. You have to. Mm-hmm. You don't just join one of these things and then just think, "Well, I'm just going to get all the views." You got to put the work in as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, most importantly, you're updating and keeping current with your comic. If you kind of drop out, you'll go and put on hiatus. They'll sideline you relatively quickly because you're not kicking into the hole. So,
Dan, do you use Top Web Comics, don't you?
I do. That's an absolute godsend. Like, you should definitely get your comic on there.
Okay.
It's free. It's easy. If you get people to vote for it, you can vote for yourself. It's not based... I guess there is an element of popularity, but you can have, like, one account per day can vote on a comic. So you can go to your work and vote on it because the IP address is different from there from your home. You could do one on your 4G. Mm-hmm. And then that... if your comic's in the top 100, you will get views. The top like 10 comics that get like hundreds and hundreds of people clicking on their banners, and it's essentially free advertising. Definitely. I mean, you can buy banners on there, and there's tons of articles on the web about like the best kind of banner to buy for your comic. And I think that the cheapest option, which affords the most clicks, is like a square. Usually, like, it used to be more webcomics sold advertising space on their site, but not so much do it now because there's a thing called Project Wonderful that folded, and I think there's a few pretenders to the throne that have jumped up. I haven't really kind of spent too much time looking into it, but buying a bit of advertising space on top webcomics, you can't go wrong. You will get site views from that.
Yeah.
So it's worth doing just to get your comic on the map.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I hope you've been making notes, Tom. I've certainly been making notes.
Yeah.
There's loads of good advice there, Danny. Yeah, without being presumptuous, I think you need to put that in a piece. There's loads of stuff there, man. I didn't know.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be really useful. Or even just a post on the page.
Yeah,
really useful.
Yeah. So, I have to say it one more time before we move on to the next part of the show. But Tom... where can people find Skellibob?
Well, Vince, they can if they go onto their PC browser of choice, Edge, Chrome, Firefox, doesn't really matter, you know, whatever private browsing, it's all there. You search www.skellibob.com. That's skellibob.com, and
yes,
and you'll find it there.
Yeah. No, it's cracking stuff, dude. And it's great to see you jump into comics, finally.
Yeah. Thank you.
I think you've done a really strong start, Tom.
Yeah, definitely, man.
That's very kind of you, sir.
So,
even if we are your second podcast, we don't mind.
Yeah.
I didn't invite...
Look, let's not go controversial. Not on this show. Not on this
Let's move on to the shout outs.
And we've only got we've got a little list of shout outs this week. Have we got any others before we get into this?
Yes, I've got I was going to mention Cliff Cumber's podcast, but we've done that, put that to bed. I was going to mention a comic Rick Jackson's launched with his son. Three panels of what? You can get this at rickjackson.bigcartel.com. It's a collection of three panel challenges between Rick and his son Dylan. who's 12. Rick draws three images without context, and he gives them to Dylan, and Dylan has to write a story around him. And then he then writes the three panels of undirected dialogue for him to illustrate. Brilliant. So that sounds like a fantastic idea.
That's a great idea.
Can I shout out my mum? Tony, she'll come visit you next Tuesday.
Thank you, mate. Yeah, good. Yeah. I don't know.
Did you just cut that joke off before he could get to it? Is that why you
said? Yeah, pretty much. I thought I'd just hear the joke and the response at the same time, you know?
Yeah. Building a community, my friend.
Yeah. one mum at a time.
One mum at a time. Get out my business cards.
Get that URL. Right. Anyway, do you have another one, Tony, before we get started on this?
Yes, I have one other.
Go for it.
I'm just finding it. Hang on. The Mercer Gallery at Harrogate has a Hilda exhibition, which is now open. Go there and go and see some original artwork and some early sketches of Hilda and stuff like that. Already very popular. We opened a bit early, so go there. Yes. And after that, you'll be able to come and see us and buy some Hilda in the
Mercer. And that is Mercer. Part of Thought Bubble, which is the UK's biggest comics festival. And it's taking place now. From the 4th to the 10th of November. Obviously everyone talks about the Comic-Con, which we're going to talk about a little bit in a sec, but you know, there's loads of stuff happening this week, so you know, go to thoughtbubblefestival.com to find out more. But
go back and listen to Chloe on the show a few weeks ago.
She's now one of our friends, which is quite cool. We'll never leave her alone. So God help her. But because we got Thought Bubble coming up, we thought we'd put a launch-centric shout-out section. So we put the shout-out. If anyone who was launching anything at the show, let us know what it is, and we're just gonna info blast these. You know,
I've got a list here.
Yeah, and I've got a little list. I'll go first on the Twitter one. See if you
cue up the Benny Hill music.
I'm not going to speed up the. Oh, that would be funny, actually. No, that's more work for me. Anyway, right, okay. So first, Luke Michael Copsey, he's launching his new comic, The Dead Next Door, with the cover by Damien, who was last... on a show. Now, Mix the Good Life with Return of the Living Dead, and You Are Somewhere Close. Table 187 in the Ask for Mercy Hall. Roger Langridge. He'll be in the Comixology Originals Hall at Table 200, and he'll be launching Zoot, Issue 3.
Cool. Hello, Roger. Good egg.
Gustavo Vargas.
Yes.
He will be at Comixology 14A, Table 14A, and will be launching his Peruvian cyberpunk comic, Manu, and also relaunching Trujillo. I hope I said that right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we were lucky to see Manu early, and
I've got a copy. I've blown it, mate. He's got his name written on it. I'll tell you what, he'll be on an image book in a year. That boy, I tell you.
Also, nice. Expect to see the word Manu an awful lot when you see people's "Here's my convention hall." That's my prediction.
I put it up in I've reviewed it recently, and I put it up in a little bit of a piece on what to look for. And everyone's coming back. I want to get that. That's great.
Christian Carnouche, he says it will be the UK launch of The Resurrected, a comic about an Indigenous Australian detective.
Oh, yeah, I saw this. It's
quest
interesting.
To save his people from extinction. And Thought Bubble's founder, Tula Lotte, drew the cover, which is a brilliant cover. He'll be in 88B in the Comixology Originals Hall. Roddy McCants, he's launching The Soul of the Sea, written by himself, art by Donna Black, and letters by Zach Sam. It's a mixed media comic, which is quite funny, considering we were talking about mixed media a couple of weeks ago on this
Sarah Harris
show. It's a mixed media comic inspired by folk horror and Dave McKean art. He'll be at Table 91B in the Comixology Originals Hall. And he also said he loves the podcast too. Thanks, Roddy.
Thank you, Matt.
Really appreciate it. Rob Jones, from the guy, the Maddiest Comics guys, they've been at Thought Bubble, I think, for the past 4 or 5 years. They're going to be at Tables 201, 202 in the Ask for Mercy Hall, and they're going to have Bun Issue 2 available for the first time. They're also fully launching The Exchange, both are all ages books full of quirks and fun. So, and Maddiest Comics, they're always good guys. Yeah, we love those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one here, and here's one that I know is going to be popular with Tony. Now, Luckett. have you read this one? Rob Luckett. Rob Luckett is launching the an all ages superhuman farting comic, Bumstorm. It's getting a remastered collected edition combining issue 1 and 2, launching at Thought Bubble. Issue 1 launched at his first ever Comic-Con table back at, in T-Bubs in 2015, and he wanted to redraw lots of it, so he did. And there's a print as well. So definitely...
Oh, he's a, in we great. Combine and involve a pink balloon.
I mean, the yeah. cover the cover is absolutely magnificent.
Crossover special.
Yep. So you can go to find him at Thought Bubble, the Comixology tent, table 203. So that's the ones I got. Tony?
Nice one. So mine is more where people are. So we can talk... They're all people we know. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about them as we go along. First off, Awesome Comics table is Ask for Mercy... at table 93A, which is where Vincenzo will be.
Hello.
Yeah, he'll be there. go over within Nerf Gun, don't mention Nerf Guns, distance is the No Brow table, which I'll be at, yes. which is table 101 to 102, because we're gangsters. We'll have Deal Raj Man from Dalston Monsters on one side and Hamish Steele on the other side. So we're proper, we're taking over the world. Mr. Alan Henderson is going to be at table 92. B, so he's going to be with Vincenzo, and he says he's he says he's going to be wearing a t-shirt that says "I am not Dan."
Okay. go and buy some
go and buy some Penguin. I love Penguin. Yeah, yeah. Stuff. Just talked about that. Sarah Dunkerton is in the Comixology Hall's original with improper books between in tables 155 to 156. She has the finale to Mulp, Scepter of the Sun, which read last weekend is and is fucking fantastic. And yeah. Love those guys, love the improper guys, and they'll have some great stuff. She says, though, if you want to find Christian Wild Goose, he'll be on another table because he's too good and too popular to be with us now. There you go. He says that. Nick Bryan, you'd be in the Ask for Mercy at table 150. You'll have three one-shots, including The Catalyst from Comic House, which is the new sort of one-shot book came out of Comic House, plus the new Work in Progress comics anthology. And he's got a story in that about squirrels. Mark Abnett, unable to attend this year, but I'm giving away my tickets as a promo. And if you go to the Facebook page, he's done a little. There's a little click. You can. I think you can get. I think it's still available. Actually, you get a free ticket from him. Neil Roche, he's at table 90 with Neil McClements, and he'll be launching issue 4 of Killing Moon, especially for Thought Bubble. Good lad. Rory Reach Illustration. He'll be there. Rory Donald. He'll be there, but he'll be wandering around. He says I'll be wandering around, being blown away by all the art on show, and he normally wears his Awesome Comics t-shirt, the good lad that he is. Yeah. I think we might have a spare one. I think I've got one for him, actually. I've just dug it out because he does rep us quite a lot, so I think we can give him one of our t-shirts. Yeah. Alex Hain, who you interviewed at Nottingham, Vince, didn't you?
Yeah.
He's at table 66 in the Comixology Hall. He'll have Blop Martian Explorer and some of his Blop Shop minis. That's not easy to say. and of course food porn, because he knows we love that one so much. We've always done Lucius Michael Copsey, haven't we? Ask for Mercy. Yeah. the Dead Next Door, we've done him. Arthur Goodman, he'll be at the Ask for Mercy table 123, and you can find his Experience the Magic of the Legend with the derivative sub manga Furry Treasure Hunters, one for you, Dan. He'll be there. Dave Kennedy, the pickled egg eating Dave Kennedy, will be there. He'll be rocking up as a punter, drooling over everyone's hard work and looking for the special stuff. I bet you will, my friend. I've got some ready for you. Sarah Harris will also be there wandering around, she says, but without a beard. Pete Davis will be walking around. It's his first time. Hopefully he'll still have some money left after the Friday night. Zach Cobb is going to be there Friday evening, ready for Saturday, soaking up the creative talent. Pete Morey, who we talked about ends well recently, didn't we, about the granny fucker. Yeah. He's going to be with Rebecca K. Jones. They'll be in the Comixology Hall, table 174. She'll have Cat Disco 1 and 2. That sounds cool. Right up your street, V. Plus a 50-page excerpt of Boomerang. And he'll be selling Enswell issues 1 and 2, plus dog posters and two T-shirt designs. I love Pete's stuff. Really good. Really interesting stuff. I'm just clicking on something to make sure I can read it. Nick Brokenshire is going to be there. We love Nick's stuff, his Star Wars stuff and all that. And he did the cover to The Spark as well, issue 1. He'll be in the Comixology room number 38. Gareth Hopkins, Joy, he has that written across his face in real life. He's in the Ask for Mercy Hall at table 170. sharing with Steve Thompson. So go in there, have a look at Never Write Anything, because I stuck a little preview of his new book up, and he always does super interesting stuff. I've just seen him say on Twitter that he's bringing out another book for... He's getting ready to do another book, I think.
Wow.
We'll see. We'll see. Yeah, but always an interesting creator and a good pal of ours. Charles Raymond, he'll be in the Ask for Mercy Hall, table 197A, and he's launching Death Ink Book 3, which I think he's just sent to the printers. Well, way to go getting it under the wire there, Charles. Good lad. Neil Roche, for those who are heading to Thought Bubble next weekend, pop over to the Pig Dog Press table 90 in the Ask for Mercy Hall. I'll be there all weekend selling my comic Killing Moon issue 4 has been launched. So there you go. Just that. That's a pretty good reply to that one, actually. There's loads of people there.
Yeah.
We made the promise that we were going to give people a shout out, and God damn it, we did. Yeah. So, if you're going to Thought Bubble, really enjoy the weekend. We're looking forward to it, but you know, come by. Say hi, chat to us, etc. You know, there won't be a hard sell, but
yeah, we'll be out clubbing it and lodging it, won't we? In bars, smoking cigars and stuff. We'll be out. Yeah.
Having a few jars.
Yeah, yeah. And then cocktails
in bed by 7:30.
Yeah.
Texting the next morning.
Texting, I'll be getting up at 3 a.m. and going back to my hotel. We'll be texting that.
Is that out of the gutter?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, me and Vince just be texting each other about how excited we are.
Yeah, literally what it will be. or what are you watching on your hotel TV?
Yeah.
I'm watching a Dolph Lundgren movie.
There's Dolph Lundgren film on Channel 5.
I thought you two were sharing a room, frankly. I thought you were top and tailing it.
He wishes.
He wishes.
Yeah. We've had enough of that snoring to last my life. That's from me. I'm a good snorer, Tom. I'm a cracking snorer. It sounds like you've got a fucking JCB in the room.
Oh, dear. Anyway, yeah, Thought Bubble, we look forward to seeing you there. So, yeah, come join us. Right.
They owe us a load of money, Thought Bubble. We must have drummed up some support for them.
Fuck me.
That's £1,000.
Like they need it.
Yeah.
I mean, when people are mentioning, I'm on table 202, and you're like, Jesus, 200, over 200 just tables in just one tent. Jesus. That's not a tent, it's a conference center, but never mind. Anyway, from comics and creators that you need to check out to some recommendations. Yeah. So, should we have the guest go first?
Idea.
Yes. Tom.
Do you mind if I do two?
Yeah.
How dare you?
One at the start, one at the end. They can book in.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Good? Yeah.
So if I just do a quick one to begin with. Okay. So I kind of think about webcomics. I thought there was almost like two main forms, like a short form and a long form.
Mm.
So for short form, there's a webcomic I want to recommend called Swords. And it's literally swordscomics.com. And it's just very quick, 4-panel stories. And there's like beep, beep, beep joke about swords. And if you read them all in one, you can take them individually, and they're very funny. If you read them all in one, there's like an ongoing little story. But yeah, just like, and also the site is perfectly set up for webcomics in terms of like, it's a really good example of how you should set this stuff up properly.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's great. Like, swords. Yeah, I've been reading that.
Now. It's good stuff. Yeah, I like that.
Oh, it's just nice.
It's all about swords, isn't it? Like cursed swords. People get magic swords, and
yeah.
The jokes are there.
The jokes, yeah. Yeah, there's my quick and dirty one.
Oh.
Nice one.
Yeah.
And we've started off quick and dirty. And when you start off quick and dirty, you always go to Dan Butcher. What's your recommendation for this week?
I got through my Kickstarter, I think about a week ago, The Cosplayer That Doomed the Earth.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, good stuff.
And I love it. It's a fantastic comic. It's really good. As a young chap, the story is a young chap who's sort of into geek and nerd culture, but when he was growing up, he really loved this character called Captain Aquitas, I think. And he's always wanted to cosplay it. He goes to the MCM comic cons all the time. And then it's one year he goes as Captain Aquitas. Obviously, everyone's like, who the fuck are you? Because everyone's dressed as Deadpool. And
you know, Captain nearly Cooper. Everyone is dressed as Deadpool.
Yeah, nearly everyone. Yeah. There's a lot of in jokes if you're a small press creator or go to MCM.
Yeah.
And it all kind of goes off the rails from there when aliens invade and take him away. And that's where the story starts proper. So it's a fantastic comic. Dan's artwork and writing just, sing on the page. I really enjoyed it. I'm going to give it over to my son once I've finished reading the second issue. He's one of the prints. I've got a print of him with the convention floor. And I'm going to frame that one because I love it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that is good. Mm. Yeah,
it's a top-down shot. Yeah.
Yes.
Really good. Really good.
And Dan does such good work. He's also doing great YouTube videos at the moment. We'll have to put a link to his site because they're not only are they hilarious. Have you seen the He-Man one, the Master of the Universe one?
No, I've not seen that one.
He does these little intros. They're all animated, and basically he was doing this, well, I think he's still doing it, where he's looking at a character he created in the 90s when he was a kid, and he's redesigning the character. And he does make jokes about it, because, like, I think he had, like, Wolfman or something like that, who was essentially Wolverine.
Yeah.
And I was watching those videos, loving the redesigns, but also at the same time thinking, that was me. I was the guy that was copying all those characters, just changing their costume, and all of a sudden they were my character.
Yeah. Wolfaro or something.
Yeah, we've all been there.
Yeah, also he's done the webcomic thing a slightly different approach. He does his on his Patreon. So you pay, like, whatever the standing fee is to read the comics, and that's another way of monetizing the comics. I know quite a few creators do that now. Some of the bigger names as well do that. Like, they have their Patreon going, and then you pay per update or per standing fee. So that's another way of approaching that one. But I think you need to build an audience before you start doing that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shall I go next?
Yes.
Yeah. This is a comic that I shouted out earlier in the week on social media and stuff. And it's on the goodcomics.co.uk website. I came across this link, and we were sent it as well. I remember, Tony, I'm not sure whether you forwarded it to me as well.
I think I did, I think Rosie sent it to me, and I forwarded it to you guys, because it's so good.
Yeah. And I read it on the website. This is a book called Sparrington.
With,
S. I can't believe I fucked that up. This was launched as part of Good Fridays, which I'm guessing Good Comics just post some webcomics on Fridays, I think. I'm guessing. Please correct me if I'm wrong, guys. But all jokes aside, this immediately has jumped into one of my top books of the year.
Yeah.
It's a very quick read. It's a very personal, poignant, and emotional story by Rosie Hathaway, creator we've spoken, we've been lucky enough to have on the show a couple of times.
Yeah, we've interviewed her on a sort of roving interview as well. I think,
and you probably know her from like works like Cosmos and things like that.
Love Cosmos, love that book.
But this is a very personal and honest story of her. I don't really want to talk too much about it, because I think to talk too much about it gives away. It almost went beyond the comic to become more of an experience. Does that make sense? Because I found it to be quite emotionally sort of. It hits you right in there.
Yeah, it's quite moving, isn't it?
Yeah, quite moving.
I always think it's a sign of how much we admire a comic by. We talked about this. Probably as much as you're going to hear from us now before we started.
Yeah.
Because we were sort of moved by it, weren't we? Yeah.
I mean, the first page, I Rosie's use of the English language is just brilliant anyway. You know, there's a certain poetry to it. This would be the only bit I'm going to read from the book, but you know, one of the lines she said, I consider myself to be incredibly lucky. After 26 years of orbiting the sun, I found the person I wish to spend the rest of my life with. Now that's just, if it was just that's perfect. That's almost perfect writing to me, because immediately I was like, you know, stuff like that floors me anyway. But then she takes you on a quite an honest and emotional journey of being in a relationship and getting to know the partner's children, basically. But being someone that doesn't have children for herself, and how sometimes people perceive that, you know, that, you know, just because you don't have kids of your own, but you can still be a parent, you know. And it's not something it's not an experience that I have any sort of knowledge of, really. Or, you know, I haven't experienced anything like that, but I really. And to convey that message, and it's quite heartbreaking in a way as well.
There's a couple of visuals in it which are just like heart wrenchingly painful to look at, but beautifully done. You know,
You know, I all the credit in the world to someone for posting something so honest and thought provoking. I think a lot of people, it's not just going to be us, a lot of people are going to talk about this. I know when it was posted, I saw a lot of comments from a lot of people in our community.
I know Tom Stewart mentioned it, didn't he?
Sarah Harris said, you know, immediately made her cry and things like that.
I got this sent by Rosie in advance, very kindly of her, and we had a chat about it, and I posted because I wanted to get something up before it was released to get a bit of buzz, because I think it really is worthy of it, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm a rude and blunt and old man, and I found it incredibly touching.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it made me pretty emotional.
Yeah.
You know, it's she's got a real elegance, a real ballet of poetry to her images. You know, they're so beautifully and but almost like slightly brief and bleak. There's a bleakness to some of her stuff, you know.
It's a black and white piece as well, isn't it? So you know, there's
that bit, she's floating in the water, and there's, I won't give away this one image, which is sort of has an iconography in it that is just heartbreaking. It's something that's never occurred to me, but the way she draws a lacking in her life, or in, I don't know if it's lacking in her life, but could be perceived as be a lacking in her life by the way she draws something. It's just incredibly well thought out. You know?
And it's not one of those, I mean, sometimes when you read, you know, autobiographical stuff, or, you know, some people, they're a bit heavy-handed.
There's an indulgence.
That's the best way to say it, indulgence.
Yeah.
This is not a story that says anything other than this is my experience. You know, this is... and. By doing so, you immediately, it's insightful and informative, and it goes beyond her experience as well, because I think once you read it, you suddenly realise, oh, I never thought about it like that before. You know, those people who aren't necessarily the biological parents, who are raising children, and you know, and the importance of that person. It's.
It's stuff. It shows what you can do with comics, I think.
To me,
we can do anything with comics, and that's one of the things. Yeah.
And I read this. I think it's probably going to be print at some point.
I think I asked her, and she said she wasn't sure, but there's a good possibility.
I read it scrolling downwards on goodcomics.co.uk. We'll put a link in the show notes, of course. And it was easy. It was really easy to follow in that way. But also, each page seemed to be designed as individual pages, so I can imagine this being collected and printed at some point, and you know, just a wonderful piece of work, just full stop. That shows the importance of what comics can do, and when used right, how honest and heartfelt they can be. So it's beautiful stuff.
I've got the link here for her page, actually. It's Rosie, Rozi Hathaway, Hathaway, RosieHathaway.com. She's got some other books, like you said, Cosmos, and I went over and just bought a book because I just really like her artwork, and I've been reviewing and liking her books for 4 or 5 years now.
As a side note, Rosie is a right laugh, and she's been on the show a couple of times.
You see her, well, I think we last saw her at Cardiff. She said to me, I think I've seen you since Cardiff, and I think that was the last time I saw her.
Yeah,
her and Sam, who's one of the people who runs Good Comics with her, came over and had a chat. Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. So check it out, people. Right, that's my lot.
Good. Do you want to go, D? I've got to find mine.
I've done mine.
Have you? Oh, sorry, man. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. What do you mean you've got to find yours? Don't you have it in front of you? Don't you have your notes ready?
Well done for padding it out, because I just have. That's good.
Yeah. There you go.
I'm going to review. Do you know what? I've reviewed so many comics this week, and I've got another two to put up tomorrow. But I'm going to review Bell Time by David Robertson. David's a pal of ours, and he does That Comic Smell. More from him possibly later in the year. And he makes his comics under the banner of Fred Egg Comics, which, if you know David is a hilarious individual.
His Break the Cake collection is brilliant.
And he churns out comics. He does these well-made, good fun. And this is kind of... imagine the Bash Street Kids or a comic like that, or maybe something like Grange Hill crossed with Back to the Future. So Lenny is the main character, who's a school kid, and he's sort of unhappy at school. He gets an egg thrown in his face and various things happen to him, and he gets bullied. And then he hears a bell in the name of the piece, Bell Time, and he goes to a room, and suddenly he finds he goes home and watches Peggy Sue Got Married. There's a movie for you.
Well.
And this sort of has a sort of interconnection with what happens to him, because he hears a bell and goes into a room and suddenly finds himself flung into the future. It seems to be like slightly in the future. So a couple of the cars look a bit like hover cars, a little bit. So there's sort of, it's 5 minutes in the future from us, and finds himself the librarian at the school library where he was a school kid. So seemingly in the future, he has become the librarian in his own school that he attended when he was a kid. And I think David has worked as a librarian off the top of my head. Dave's from Dundee, the home of British comics, and this has got a real British comics feel to it, which I kind of like, you know. It's also got an element of movies like Clockwise. Do you remember that John Cleese movie?
Yeah,
a little bit of that. TV series like Teachers, we saw that. But it's also straight out the Beano. It's got that straight up Beano feel to it, but crossed with Back to the Future. So he ends up as the librarian, and it's just his sort of day to day, and he's kind of a bit lost. But he kind of finds his way and actually becomes not a bad teacher. You see that he's, you know, all the kids are like, because it's you know, 5 minutes from now, so all the kids are like, you're not allowed to touch me, you know, and all this sort of thing. You know, that sort of thing going on. But he actually becomes quite a good teacher, and it's amusing and a little bit real about stuff, and quirky, and it's very quirky, very sort of idiosyncratic to his style. And there's a little finish to it, and it's just a good, fun story that you can zip through fairly quickly. The art is iconically brief and consistent and works well and has a good flow to it. You know, it really does have that sort of flow that you can just follow it, and everyone's distinctive and you know who everyone is. And, you know, there's a little bit of the Scott McCloud in his style, you know, that sort of brief caricature and style to it. But yeah, it's just really good fun. There's a couple of little bits that he adds a few extra stories, sort of pad the volume out. There's a thing about the Tay Bridge, which is the Tay Bridge disaster, the Tay Bridge being the one that is that you can drive over. I think you can drive over to get into Dundee. There's a thing called School Tales, and it's written by I think it's his wife and kids. So Carolyn Robertson, Ethan Robinson, and Miles Robertson, and Prabs Dayhell also writes a story. And Alf Robertson, and it's just stories from school, sort of funny little stories from school. And follow David on Twitter and all that sort of thing if you can. I think he's at Fred Comics, and he's at Thought Bubble, so go and see him there. And it's just fun. So it's called Bell Time by David Robertson. That's my one. There you go.
Nice. Right then, Tom, take us away.
So, have any of you guys ever heard of ElfQuest?
Yes. ElfQuest, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so basically I was just going to recommend ElfQuest because it's all available online.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Is it really?
So basically everything from... So ElfQuest was originally created by Wendy and Richard Peeney in 1978.
I follow Wendy Peeney on Facebook, and she's still doing it. I think they're still putting out stuff, I think.
It finished last year, 2018.
Oh, did it? Oh, yep. Okay, right.
But everything up to 2013, so it's over like 4,000 pages, is available at ElfQuest.com.
Jesus.
Right, okay. Yeah,
and...
Right.
Like the thing that I really like about it is
quite a hot book. Used to be like a popular. It was in the Epic line, I think, at one point.
Yeah. It's everyone's had it. Marvel, DC, Dark Horse have got it at the moment. Okay. It's been self-published as well. But the thing that I really like about it is unashamedly fantasy. There's no like known winks, you know, like the Eagles are busy, all that kind of shit. It's just enjoying itself and has a good time. And yeah, it's brilliant.
It's got a big chunk of fandom around it as well.
Oh yeah, it really does.
And for those red-blooded males here, look up Wendy Peeney as Red Sonja if you get a chance.
I'll do that right now.
No, I'll definitely check that out, because ElfQuest is something that I never got around to reading. So, you know, that's one of the ones that's to scratch off the list.
For me, it came out at the same time that Epic were doing, I think, Grew the Wanderer and stuff like that, and I was reading it back then. Yeah.
And the art style is... So the art's incredible, but the designs are something else, you know, like it's hard to, how can I describe it? They're very stylized. Yeah. And like it's jarring at first, but after all, you just sort of get into it. And it's just, yeah, it's a really great story.
Oh, nice. Brilliant.
Yeah.
So there you go, folks. Tons of different styles of comics to read this week. I've got an awful lot of show notes to do, although I probably won't remember half of them. I've tried to make notes, so go. But we hope you enjoyed this week's walk through the webcomic fields. And further on. Whether you're going to make a webcomic or whether you just want to read more webcomics, then definitely check out some of the links, creators, communities that we talked about on this show. And feel free to continue the conversation in several different ways. If there's something that you want us to know or shout out about or anything like that, then you can get in touch with us, because we'll always give a shout out on the show.
Yes.
So you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod. We're not going to do any questions for the next show, because like I say, we're going to be recording early, so it's just going to be us, you know, the three hosts just talking nonsense for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
It should be fun.
when I review Surrealsville.
Oh yes. Look forward to that.
Yeah.
It'll be that episode. Are you going to read all issues, Dan?
I'm going to read one and then see how it takes me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you never know. Oh, I look forward to that.
Reading 17 issues of a comic, yeah.
That's hard going, isn't it?
That'd just be the entire show. but you can also, if you do Facebook, then go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, and you can continue this conversation on our Facebook group, Awesome Comics Talk, where loads of advice and comics talk and convention talk, and I'm sure there'll be a there'll be a Thought Bubble thread over the next couple of days. There was an Inktober thread, which was fantastic.
That's our biggest thread ever. It was like 700 posts or something.
And
thanks to everyone who took part in that. I loved that.
I've got a big shout out to Dave Kennedy's stuff, which was just a diamond. His stuff, he was doing like all 80s films and cartoons. Loved it.
McCune did some Blueberry stuff that was fucking outstanding as well. Amongst loads of good stuff.
There's joy to look through that every day.
Mm-hmm. Claire Spiller did some good. It's never ending.
So go to Awesome Comics Talk to find out that, because there's a great community of people as well. We're not one of those Facebook groups where you get hard selling for Kickstarters or whatever. It's just
people arguing over fucking crap.
We're all comics fans, makers, lovers, whatever. We post up the episode on that page every week, and feel free to get stuck into the conversation on that thread as well. So thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave a review, subscribe, help to get the word out about this show, etc., and whatever we talk about on a weekly basis. And whether you listen to us on any kind of network, like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what are the networks we on, Tony?
We're on Pod, Buff, The Basement.
anyone who knows that reference, we will give you a prize.
You will.
Come
and get a free print of Thought Bubble if you're there, if you know that reference.
Are you selling the special stuff at Thought Bubble?
I'll have the special stuff with me, my friend.
Are you going to have it with you? It's not going
to
be.
I can give it to you, babes. We were almost within sight of each other, so we won't lose sight of each other. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
So if you want copies of the Horror Chronicles, you've got to go to the Awesome Comic table and ask for the special stuff.
And they will be $3.50 each.
That's right.
There you go.
It's a steal.
Yeah.
With the marvellous artwork of our guest, Thomas Curry.
Tony, if I can't make it to Thought Bubble, where can I buy the Hall Chronicles from?
Oh, Tom. You can go to Skellibob. No, you can't. Neveronanything.bigcartel.com.
And you're still taking commissions, Vince, for Thought Bubble.
I am indeed, yes.
I've done one for my boy, for my son.
Brilliant.
Yes, I've got some space left and a bit of time to. Thank you to everyone that's asked for one of them. I've had fun doing these,
you really want one of them, I tell you.
They're good, man. Yeah, really good.
Really good.
We're gonna miss you, Dan. We're gonna miss you, man.
Yeah.
One year, you got to make it up north.
I'm sitting here looking at fucking piles of boxes containing my comics and.
Oh mate.
And shedding one single tear.
Yeah.
Not that. From his face.
I'll tell you what, Curry's laugh is almost as dirty as yours, Dan.
He's like, we've got it in stereo. Anyway, where can people find us online, Twitter, etc.? Tony?
NeverMindAnything.blogspot.com. There's a load of reviews going up pre Thought Bubble and all that sort of blah, so have a look at that. And Ezohyz on Twitter.
Daniel.
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
Nice. You can find out more about my comic at TheRedMouseFromMars.com. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter @JesterDiablo. And like I say, I'll be at Thought Bubble, table 93A, where, you know, I'll have awesome comics. Our anthology, if you haven't got it yet, it's a crazy deal.
Good deal, this.
It's fantastic.
Four comics, limited edition badge, and print for a fiver. £5. We're there just... We just want to put comics in your hands. And, you will enjoy them. I'm going to big it
that's
up.
Like, What's that? That's like 120 pages of comic or something. I can't remember it. Is it?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
Bloody hell, that's good.
Yeah, don't think about the numbers. No, I'll give you a nose bleed. Yeah.
And you get a fucking badge as well.
You get a badge. Yeah.
Everyone loves a badge.
Yep. And it's, whenever we see anyone with one of our badges, they're immediately our best friend. So,
yeah, exactly.
And I will have my first ever sketchbook at the table. So,
bizarre, that's great as well. Yeah, you were seeing that.
It feels really weird doing a selling bit on this show. But it's got to be done.
It's got to be done.
So please come up and see me at the show. If you're not
got
there,
got to pay for our class A somehow. Vince.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. What class are you in? Are you in woodworking or are you in?
I was in the class for the stupid kids.
All right. I thought you were going to be in pottery. I was going to Patrick Swayze you. Anyway.
It's a metaphor for sex.
Did I ever tell you that story about going to see Ghost? We got taken to see it. We're like secondary school for the boys. Our master told us in the show, and we was all like watching it down like some flea pit cinema in West Croydon. And was it that bit where they're doing the fucking clay? Someone shouted out, "Ricky Skeets has got a boner," and the fucking entire cinema just went up.
Oh, I've got a worse story than that I can't tell on the air. Okay. I'll just tell it afterwards.
Ricky Skeets killed himself after that.
He what?
Tragic story.
Jesus Christ.
Always gets dark at the end.
Yeah. They played Unchained Melody at the funeral. Bit insensitive.
Fine. If he has killed himself, I backfired that joke.
Yeah. Please, we hope you're okay, Ricky.
Yeah.
But put it away. That's good, lad.
Tom. He's looking on Patrick Swayze like, as Sam. No, let's stop this joke.
Let's just stop this now. Let's stop this. Before this becomes the last ever episode of the Awesome Comics Podcast. Tom, where can people find you and your work, etc.?
Oh, you can find me on my website, wheresrickynow.com. No.
Ricky's doing porn.
Well, at least like the boner are doing something good.
Yeah, he had all the skills.
That was the key moment. Well, actually, yeah, I've got a boner.
Yeah, I know. I can make £1 million.
I should take this to the careers advisor.
Can't do woodwork, but look at the state of that.
Exciting rival podcast, like, you know, the hunt for Ricky. Every week, you're trying to
red the red bone timber.
But Tom, where can they find?
You can... He told you.
You can find me online at you can follow me on Twitter at This Chucklehead, and you can find my work at this website we've been mentioning the whole way through the episode, skellybob.com.
What was that again?
Skellybob.com.
Right. I think we should all say Skellybob at the same time after three. just hearing his voice, he's like, oh no, please don't. Oh dear!
I can't afford it anymore, Vince.
Sorry.
Let me call them.
We have mates on. This happens.
Yeah.
We have like a sensible guest from TKO, and we're all sensible for fucking heads. I think get someone we know, and it all descends into chaos.
Just absolute chaos. But hopefully, chaos that you enjoyed, folks. So yeah, go forth, read loads of comics, and whether you're at a convention or not, have a brilliant week. Just read skellybob.com. There you go. That's another £5. and well, brother's got to eat, do you know what I mean? And as always, what do they do, Dan?
Stay awesome.
Was he further away then? Is he literally walking away from the show? I knew it would happen one day.
No, never say that.
No.
Right, this is
I said he was off. Gotta find Rich. Gotta find Ricky.
I'm googling him. I'm gonna add him on Facebook if I can find him. Love you. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
See ya. Skeets. I feel bad now. No, I don't. I don't feel bad. That's a lie. Ricky Skeets.
They have just eaten a madness fish in the swamp. Like, are you seven? I'm eating a madness fish.
I think I am seven.